As the world has stumbled through several major economic and political ups and downs in the past decade, one thing has continued to rise: the price of gold. And the metal has been pitched to everyday people as an important hedge against catastrophe. But some are beginning to wonder whether the value of gold has reached a peak and if it may be on the verge of collapse. Thomas Frank writes the Easy Chair column for Harper's Magazine. His article, Gold Faithful, Profiting from Paranoia with Precious Metals, appears in the magazine's June issue, and I'm pleased to welcome him back to our show today.
So how are you today?
I'm okay. Today, gold is trading around $1,500 an ounce. How much has the value of the metal increased over the last decade?
A lot. What can I say? It's something like five times. I think I don't have a chart in front of me, but I think it was about $300 in the year 2000.
Really? Wow. And now it's 1,500.
That's right. Yeah.
So
it's gone up a lot.
And has it consistently risen over that time, or have there been fluctuations?
It fluctuates like any other commodity. I mean, if there was anything that just went straight up, you know, I'd know about it.
Well, what has it meant for the jewelry business? Does a simple gold band cost thousands now, if we're talking about $1,500 an ounce?
You know, I saw a funny thing the other day. It was a Swiss Army knife with a little sliver of gold built into it, and it cost a whole bunch. So jewelry is way up there. You'd think it would be, it actually is at the point where people are, you know, selling old jewelry and stuff like that they don't wear anymore. Silver got to a point where their friends of mine told me they were selling their family silverware. This was a few weeks ago.
Well, silver hasn't been as consistent as gold, has it?
No. Silver lagged behind for a really long time, and then just in the last year, silver really took off. And it went from, you know, a fairly low, stable price under here. I am looking at silver charts as we speak. A fairly stable price over the decades to all of a sudden, you know, a stable price around between $10 and $20 an ounce up to $50 an ounce. That was just a few weeks ago. That was actually while I was writing the article in Harper's Magazine, and then it plummeted. So on a chart, it sort of looks like a classic, it's got a bubble sort of formation. You know, it goes right up and then falls right down.
But was it being pulled by gold?
That's not clear. It should show some relation to the price of gold, right? They're both precious metals. They both have historically been used as currency.
And Jennings Bryan hasn't given a speech in years.
That's right. But now remember, he was partial to silver, not gold. He did not like gold.
No, he didn't want to be crucified on a cross of gold.
Silver was the precious metal of the common man. There's actually that whole history. This is what I try to get into in the article. That long history is very amusing and also filled with all sorts of funny episodes. One that I didn't get to use in the story was Father Coughlin in the 1930s, who everybody remembers, the radio priest.
The Nazi sympathizing radio priest.
Later on, that's right. But before he went down that road, he was believe it or not, he was a big, he pushed free silver, the old William Jennings Bryan sort of nostrum. And what happened was, as a cure for the Depression, for the Great Depression, and it turned out that he or someone very close to him was the nation's biggest speculator in silver. You know, they thought that he was going to be able to put the country on some kind of silver standard.
Now, I saw a documentary not long ago that suggested that gold mining causes a lot of damage to the environment. And the documentary suggested that people just melt down their old gold, and that's where we should get most of the gold because there's plenty floating around. But is that another concern here?
Well, that's not a concern that I raised. What you say about the gold mining process, I'm pretty sure that's correct.
In the American Southwest, especially, they're doing the same sort of thing that they're doing with coal, where they blow off mountaintops, and there's an awful lot of arsenic that winds up in the environment.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that's going to happen when the price gets as high as it is. But the thing that struck me about gold mining is, you know, I started my story in Harper's Magazine with revisiting the days when Franklin Roosevelt took us off the gold standard. Mm-hmm. And people, you know, there's a lot of nostalgia for the gold standard these days. You know, among others, Ron Paul talks about it a lot. A lot of Tea Party people are really into the idea of a gold standard. They think there's even a constitutional basis for it, you know, that it's unconstitutional for us not to be on some kind of metallic standard, some hard metal standard. But the interesting thing is that they think that a gold standard gives you this sort of automatic stability to your currency. But in fact, it just puts you at the mercy of countries that mine gold. And guess who they are? It's South Africa and China, the same country that is loaning us all the money, and Russia, too.
Now, the gold standard would have every dollar represented somehow matched by some gold in Fort Knox?
That's what it was. That's how it worked, right. The amount of circulating paper money was determined by the amount of gold that the U.S. government had in its vaults.
Now, we maintained something of a gold standard after FDR kind of pulled us away during the Great Depression, and it was completely eliminated under LBJ or Nixon, wasn't it?
It was under Nixon, yeah. Yeah, it's famous. They called it, he closed the gold window. So, we had effectively been off the gold standard for many years.
Now, how long had the financial world operated on the gold standard?
Oh my goodness, hundreds of years, hundreds of years. Although, you know, not as it's not as much of a you know, it's not something as, you know, people who are the real serious gold bugs will tell you this is how humanity worked its financial systems for thousands of years, and that's not quite right either. There were lots of different systems, and some countries had a silver standard, and like I said, in America there was this huge fight in the 19th century over whether we should have a gold standard or a silver standard. Very interesting fight, by the way. A lot of people today don't, you know, it seems like such an obscure question. How could people have been so passionate about it? You know, the election of 1896, that was the, you know, which was in a very deep recession, a lot like the one that we are either just left or still in, depending on how you look at it. But they were in a very deep recession, and they had this big, you know, electoral campaign mainly about should we be on a gold standard or should we be on a silver standard. And it was one of the most, you know, highest participation elections ever. The Democratic candidate, William Jennings Bryan, who you mentioned earlier, who favored a silver standard, I mean, they called him these incredible names. They thought he was a kind of, you know, Robespierre figure, you know, who was going to overthrow civilization by putting us on a silver standard instead of a gold one. It's fascinating stuff, and it's largely, you know, forgotten why that appealed to people's passions the way that it did.
My guest is Thomas Frank, whose Easy Chair column is Gold Faithful, Profiting from Paranoia with Precious Metals, in the current issue of Harper's Magazine. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Didn't John Maynard Keynes call the gold standard a barbarous relic? Was that the reason that FDR decided to move away from it?
Not because of, you know, anyone's rhetoric. What Roosevelt did was a pretty rational thing. I'm trying to remember the exact particulars, but the gold standard was basically under serious assault by other countries around the world. And the bigger problem in the Depression, you know, was deflation. And we often don't remember that it was that's what was going on in the early 1930s, and that's a devastating situation. And a gold standard tends to, it makes deflation worse, okay? Because your money supply, you know, the amount of gold in the world is fairly fixed, right? Except, you know, unless South Africa finds more or something like that. The amount of gold in the world is pretty much fixed. And so the economy grows, all these things are going on in the economy, but the amount of money out there stays the same, therefore prices go down. And this was a pretty much a disastrous situation in the 30s. You also had lots of hoarding going on because banks were failing. And so taking us off the gold standard was a very reasonable response to the situation.
And did the financial establishment at the time, the bankers, Andrew Mellon and the like, believe that going off the gold standard was a good idea?
Oh, my goodness. A lot of them, I mean, it's what's famous. The famous answer to what you're saying is they screamed bloody murder. They thought it was the worst thing ever. There's one of Roosevelt's advisors, he had a number of conservative advisors as well as liberals, and one of the conservative advisors said this is the end of Western civilization. But there were some bankers that recognized it as being the right thing to do at the time. I don't have the book in front of me, but there's I think in Arthur Schlesinger's History of the New Deal, he has the different reactions. But you'd be surprised. There were some big Wall Street bankers that thought it was the right thing to do.
Now, are there countries that still remain on the gold standard?
I don't believe there are. And if there are, they're going to be really, really small countries. South Africa had obviously that's the country that produces gold, that mines gold. They had those Kruger Rands, which were coins in everyday circulation. But I don't think that's going on anymore. I think they're mainly a collector's item now.
The Kruger Rands were during the period of apartheid, and that was one of the ways that government kept itself afloat.
That's right. You knew that. And that's also one of the reasons why the American right was so keen on the gold standard in those days, because it was a backdoor way of propping up the apartheid regime.
Now, the right seems to generally be involved in support of the gold standard, or at least in buying gold. Glenn Beck, for example, has pushed gold as a hedge against catastrophe.
Yeah.
What kind of catastrophe does he imagine is on the way?
It's your own personal gold standard, you can undo in your own basement what Franklin Roosevelt did to us, 80 years ago or whatever. I should clarify one thing here. I know a lot of conservatives. This is something that's a little beyond conservatism. Every gold bug I have ever met is to the right of center, okay, with maybe like two exceptions, okay? But it's not the kind of stuff that Glenn Beck is talking about is not a mainstream conservative position. Glenn Beck and a lot of the people who are pushing up the price of gold are counting on some kind of economic doomsday overtaking the United States. They're counting on this destruction of the dollar. And they always follow the same scenario. They think it's going to come via hyperinflation. They talk about Weimar Germany, which had the most sort of famous case of hyperinflation.
Zimbabwe does now.
Zimbabwe, yeah, they've got it bad there. A couple other cases like that. But that's what they see happening. And what's really interesting is that after the financial crisis, I was pulling a lot of these disaster investment books off my shelf, and there's one from 1979. I've got it here somewhere. Let's see, How to Prosper During the Coming Bad Years by Howard Ruff. And this is a very interesting book. It's one of the biggest personal financial bestsellers of all time.
So this is nothing new.
No, this comes and goes all the time. Or I should say, look, in my lifetime, this is not something new. This happened in the 70s, and back when gold was at its previous all-time peak. The funny thing was that these books came out, talking about investing for the disastrous times that were coming, basically right at the peak. And then if you bought the stuff after reading these books in 1979, you would have been buying right at the very top, which is a shame, but that's the way these things often work. But so I got this book by Howard Ruff off the shelf, and there's a lot of parts of it that are very uncanny predictions of what has happened in the financial crisis. He talks about banks making really, really stupid investments, and then they're having some kind of financial crisis, the system breaking down, and the government riding to the rescue, printing up money to get everybody out of the hole, which is effectively what happened. But then he says that will lead to you know, then the next step in that process is hyperinflation, the complete, you know, the destruction of the dollar, and you've got to have some hard metal money around your house in your safe deposit box for that eventuality.
Well, there are some pretty prominent conservative economists today. Are they advocating something along these lines?
I don't know of any serious economists, like mainstream conservative economists, who are advocating a gold standard. Now, I admittedly did not take my research that far on this. I'm trying to remember if that was one of Milton Friedman's things. I'm drawing a blank on that one. I know I could just look it up if I had my Google handy. but that does not strike me as you think of sort of mainstream conservative economists. You think of a guy like Alan Greenspan, who had a sort of a trace of gold bug sentiment, but you think of like a guy like Ben Bernanke, who is an expert on the 1930s, who has written about the gold standard, and who knows what a mistake the gold standard can be.
Well, you know, you were talking earlier about Krugerrands, and of course the word Rand is in that, so maybe there is some kind of...
You're thinking Ayn Rand, aren't you?
Maybe there's some kind of connection here.
Or Rand Paul.
Are these people proposing that we invest in gold, or are they suggesting that we get put some gold in under the mattress or in the basement?
They would consider that that's the way to invest in gold, is to actually have it in your house. You know, there's in the commodities markets, what they call it is when you take delivery on whatever it is that you're investing in. So you're buying gold or whatever in the commodities market, and you take delivery on it. You actually get the physical gold and you store it somewhere. Now, in the old days, this was thought to be, you know, the conventional wisdom on investing in gold is like this is a really bad idea, is what everybody would tell you, because the gold doesn't pay dividends, you know, doesn't pay interest. It just sits there in a vault somewhere, and you have to pay for storage, you know, you have to keep it in a bank or something, to rent a safe deposit box. And so it had a lot of strikes against it, and people thought it was a really lousy way to invest. But the people who are pushing gold now generally say that's the way to do it. You buy gold coins, you buy, you know, gold bars or whatever, and you keep them in your house or in your safe deposit box somewhere where they're outside of exchange. You know, it's not a paper commodity. It's not, electrons on your computer. You can actually put your hands on the yellow metal, you know.
So if paper loses its value and the whole society collapses, you still have something that everybody agrees has value. Gold. Of course, we could be doing this with diamonds as well.
Right. Of course. Yeah. At the end of the day, why gold? You know, it's gold because it's gold because it's gold because it's gold. You can't look into this too deeply or the whole thing just falls apart. Silver is actually a very useful metal, or it was anyways, used in photography all the time, used in all kinds of industrial applications. And gold isn't as useful. It's used in jewelry. Not too many other things. You'd think the most useful thing would be to have a couple barrels of oil, you know, or something like that. Have a strategic petroleum reserve, all of your very own. But that's what they're doing. They're buying gold and hoarding it. And by the way, this isn't just fringe people. This is one of the things that got me really interested in this subject, was when I discovered that I read in the newspaper, that the University of Texas, which has a big, investment fund, had gone heavily into gold, but had taken delivery on it, like I described, and was having it stored somewhere, so that it's not, you know, something that's out there, that could be exchanged or something like that. So it's not liquid. It's sitting in a vault somewhere.
We have to take a break, but before we go, a listener writes in, the libertarian magazine Reason quotes Milton Friedman from 1974 on the gold standard. He said, "I think those people who say they believe in a gold standard are fundamentally being very anti-libertarian, because what they mean by a gold standard is a governmentally fixed price for gold," which is really interesting. Thomas Frank's article, Gold Faithful, profiting from paranoia with precious metals is in the current issue of Harper's Magazine. We'll get to using words like paranoia and other things when we return. Stay with us. We're back with Thomas Frank, whose article is part of the Easy Chair series, is Gold Faithful, Profiting from Paranoia with Precious Metals. It's in the current issue of Harper's Magazine. And Thomas, Patrick in the Bronx asks, does the hunger for gold moderate when the economy is going well?
Yes, this is one of the things that I wanted to get at in the article, is that the big vulnerability of this kind of this gold investment is that, you know, what if it turns out that we aren't on a, you know, heading towards we aren't the Titanic heading towards the iceberg? You know, what if it turns out that everything is going to be fine? Then the gold investors are going to be, you know, in a lot of trouble, because, like, remember that book title, how to prosper during the coming bad years. What if the coming years aren't bad? You know, what if they aren't, or, you know, they don't have to not be bad. They just have to not be a, you know, outright disaster. And suddenly this investment, there's no basis for it.
You have the
there's no basis for it anyways, but there's really no basis for it.
Have the prices of other precious metals gone up in a similar fashion? I'm not talking about silver, but platinum, for example.
Oh, well, there's commodities in general have been on a tear for the last couple of years. You know, they've been going up and up and up. And there's all kinds of – I've heard many different explanations for why that is. You know, everything from the fact that, you know, the economy of the world is becoming, you know, is becoming much bigger. So there's new consumers of oil and grain and beef and everything else all over the world that – weren't there 20 years ago. You know, it's a sort of a variation on the peak oil scenario. And then I've heard other explanations that blame speculators for it. And both explanations have a lot to recommend them.
A listener wonders, if you had a lump of gold in your basement, how would you even spend it? Well, let's say you had a gold coin. How would you spend it? Wouldn't you trade it in for paper money?
You'd think, but the idea is to have it there in case when the paper money fails. I mean,
and then what
just,
would you do? You go into a grocery store and you put down this piece of gold like the old mining days and say, you know, fill her up?
Yeah. You know, that's the thing is when you start looking into it too deeply, you know, you're talking about a scenario where everything is completely broken down, you know, and you're assuming that somehow precious metal is going to be the thing that works. But in the defense of the metalheads, they generally call for keeping sacks of old silver coins around, which in previous years you could buy for fairly, you know, reasonable price. They call it junk silver. So you buy a roll of old silver dollars or something, old silver quarters, something like that, and you have that around. And the idea is that those will be in common circulation or something like that. I mean, but, you know, nobody really knows, because this scenario has never come to pass.
Well, if you look around at the problems with the U.S. economy and the debt crisis in the Eurozone, along with the political unrest in the Middle East and other places, can you blame people for seeing gold as a secure investment?
No, it seems, especially if you, I don't know if you watched the Glenn Beck program, but there is a new disaster to fear every night, you know. And this is not just Glenn Beck anymore. This is sort of the culture of the Tea Party movement, is that, you know, we're on the road to hell, you know. We're going down fast. And this kind of investment is tailor-made for that sort of mindset. So No, I certainly don't blame people for doing this. In some ways, I wish I had thought of it myself, you know, 3 years ago.
When gold was a lot less expensive than $1,500 an ounce.
That's right.
But, that's just called buying low and selling high.
Exactly.
But you call these people money cranks and kooks. Major banks
money
and
cranks, yes. Well, this is a sort of grand old term in American history, and that's referring to the debates in the 19th century and well up into the 20th century, where people thought that changing the currency, you know, to a silver standard or getting back on the gold standard or whatever, but mainly it had to do with the silver standard. That was a contemptuous term that was used for this.
A listener in Queens points out the reason societies went from gold as money to paper backed by government credit as money was because the Industrial Revolution meant that production of goods far outstripped the production of gold.
Yes,
that's why
right.
There were many gold rushes in the 19th century as production of gold could never keep up with the manufactured production of goods.
Exactly right. And it also, and if you put yourself on a gold standard, then you're basically, you know, how are the mines doing in South Africa today? And this actually, you know, came to pass in that terrible depression in the 1890s that we were talking about before, where there was, you know, terrible deflation because of the gold standard, and Brian was out there screaming for a silver standard, speaking very eloquently in favor of a silver standard because we had a lot more silver. You know, it's a much more plentiful metal, and it would have brought about inflation rather than deflation, which is what the gold standard brought. And what finally ended that deflation was the fact that they struck gold in South Africa, the famous, you know, the Rand, mm-hmm. the big gold mining center in South Africa. They found the gold there, and the world supply of gold increased, and the deflation stopped. But that's to, you know, to chain your economy to, you know, developments in a far-off country that you don't have any control over.
Speaking of old terms, you note that in the 1930s, people who worked in the financial industry were called banksters, a combination of bankers and gangsters.
That's right, yeah. It's a term that's made a sort of triumphant comeback in recent years.
Well, major banks and even the University of Texas have all put money into gold. Do you believe that they're hedging against an economic apocalypse too?
I think they're thinking of it as a smart investment. I have a sort of a tongue-in-cheek footnote in the story in Harper's where I come up with a comical explanation for why the University of Texas has slapped down this enormous investment in gold. I'm joking. Should I tell your listeners what my explanation is?
Of course.
Okay. So.
And is Rick Perry going to run for president?
No, I have no idea. Maybe he'll bring us the gold standard. You know, he'll bring it back, solve all our problems. You know, it's ironic because, you know, we've left out a very important fact in all this conversation, which is that there is no inflation in the economy right now. This is not an inflationary time. It's the opposite. It's a time of, you know, sort of rampant deflation. You look at what's happened to the prices of assets, you know, in the last couple of years. You know, the stock market is way down off its peak. The price of real estate is way, obviously, way, way, way down. You know, other things like oil and food are going up. But this is not an inflationary time. You know, it seems like a peculiar thing to worry about hyperinflation when it's not even on the horizon.
But you write that for many people, gold is a moral investment, not a technical.
Exactly, one. Exactly. That's what's going on. This is what makes gold as an investment so attractive, and it's something that appeals even to a really cynical liberal like me. It's this idea of hubris, of man getting beyond himself, and this is what, you know, this is sort of what all these debates between, say, Hayek and John Maynard Keynes, this is what they were all about. The idea that the economy, on the one hand, the idea that it can be run by, you know, a bunch of smart people in Washington, D.C. can make, you know, certain decisions and everything will work just fine. The sort of, you know, Roosevelt or New Deal or liberal idea. And on the other hand, the idea that that markets are this sort of natural phenomenon and you should never interfere in them. And any kind of interference can only lead to disaster, which is a moral idea and, you know, and a very attractive one in some ways. And so some people look at the history of the last 80 years and they just see disaster after disaster after disaster. And they think it's come to this great head and we're finally going to be punished, you know, by the fates or by the, you know, the invisible hand or something like that. We're finally going to be punished for trusting in human reason to adjust, you know, our money supply and do all the things that the bureaucrats do in Washington, D.C. And because they see that whole way of organizing an economy as being so questionable, you know, that's they just know it's going to crash. It's going to collapse, and that's why you got to have gold, because you know gold.
Well, but investors looked down on gold as an investment just 10 years ago or so. But according to the San Francisco Chronicle, it's returned an average of about 17% annually over the past decade. If the Dow Jones Industrial Average had grown as fast, it would be over 50,000 by now. So I imagine that,
yes.
So, you know, now I'm
feeling...
Do you
remember when they were actually saying that was going to happen? There was a bestseller in 1999 called Dow 36,000.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, what, you know, there's... There are a lot of ways in which the gold mania, or I should say the precious metals mania, because it's, you know, it's silver now too, but the precious metals mania reminds me of certain things in the dot-com era. In particular, I don't know if you're aware of this, but I wrote a book back then in the year 2000 called One Market Under God, and it was about the sort of use of liberationist language in by all kinds of people, like investment advisors and companies in their advertisements and in companies' annual reports and stuff like that. And there was all kinds of language about of a revolution in the late 90s, and during the dot-com boom, that we had to overturn all our old ways of thinking about how to value the prices of stocks, that sort of thing. And we had to think in all these new terms, and we had to be outside of the box and blah, blah, blah. And this was always – they would always use the term revolution to describe this stuff. And the One Market Under God is filled with, hundreds of examples of this kind of rhetoric. But what's funny is you look around in particular, the people who are investing in silver, at what they're saying online, and they use a lot of the same liberationist rhetoric all the time. It's really peculiar.
They have the SLA, not the Symbionese Liberation Army, but the Silver Liberation Army.
Yes, I thought that was pretty amusing. The Silver Liberation Army, and they have a website, and there's a TV presenter, I forget what channel he's on, who is the sort of leader of this movement. But the idea is to buy a whole bunch of silver, take delivery on it. Like I said, you always got to have the physical thing. You got to put your hands on the silver coins or the silver bars or whatever it is. Put them in your basement, and drive the price of silver up. And here's I'm going to read some of these quotes. And when this happens, they call it a form of proletariat uprising, that it's going to take back the wealth from the criminal banksters. There's that word again. And I found some guy online who has written a version of, the old communist anthem, the Internationale. He's written words for it, so it's about silver investing.
Well, in Utah, Utah became the first state in the country to legalize gold and silver coins as currency. And the Representative Brad Galvez, who's a Republican representative and sponsor of the bill, told the Associated Press that it largely serves as a protest against Federal Reserve monetary policy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's that's straight up money crank is what that is. But it's fascinating. We have this with this all time level of distrust of the Federal Reserve. Look at what they did. They bailed out all those banks a couple of years ago. Just ran the printing presses, rode to the rescue on their magic printing press. And what I don't understand about the Utah, and everybody's pissed off about that. Everybody's angry about that. But what I don't understand about the Utah. The law in Utah. How are you supposed to value? How is it that you can go into a 7-Eleven like you were saying earlier with your Krugerrand and buy stuff?
Well, or buy Harper's Magazine, because your article is in the June issue. Your Easy Chair column called "Gold Faithful: Profiting from Paranoia with Precious Metals." And I want to thank you so much, Thomas Frank, for being on our show again.
Anytime.
Okay.